Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Average Joe Radio. This is Average Joe, December 8th, 2019. Hey, we're going to talk about Pearl Harbor today. As I said in my promo, and you know, yesterday was the date of the Pearl Harbor attack. Today we're going to actually talk about kind of more, well, some of the things that led up to Pearl Harbor and some to the attack, and then also some of the mistakes that the Americans made and some that the Japanese made. Most of you history buffs are probably going to know most of this, and I'm more than happy to have you call in at 914-219-0884. I hadn't said this in a while. I'm getting the big head, but I'm not an expert. I am Average Joe. And, you know, I have a pretty good general knowledge of most American history. I have my weak spots, but, you know, I'm learning. I was kind of a late student. But, you know, most of you know that I am very interested in American war history. You know, we did a whole series on Americans at war, the United States at war. Before we get into that, though, this day in history, this was a big one. This one was actually something that stuck with me and still does. John Lennon was shot today in 1980, 39 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been that long. I actually graduated high school in 1980, and so it was it had a big effect on me. Me and some friends, we actually went to a UNCC, University of North Carolina, Charlotte. There was a band, Sponge Tones, that is a tribute band to the Beatles. They played, and also there was several moments of silence. I don't remember how long it was, but me and some of my closest friends, we all wore black armbands with a peace sign on it for a week or so in just remembrance in the horribleness of John Lennon being shot, the irony of him preaching peace and being shot down in the street. I mean, literally. He was 40 years old. He was just such a young man, too. He was entering his luxury Manhattan apartment building when Mark David Chapman shot him four times at close range with a 38 caliber revolver. Lennon was bleeding profusely. He was rushed to the hospital but died en route. Chapman had received an autograph from Lennon earlier in the day and voluntarily remained at the scene of the shooting until he was arrested by police. He just wanted to be famous. I mean, how sick. I mean, I do not understand people. I do not understand people. Mr. Scott.
Hey, what's going on?
I'm just talking about John Lennon, man. Did you catch any of that?
I did not. A recent caller, instantaneously, in fact.
Yeah, I saw you pop up.
Cool.
Yeah, today in history, John Lennon was shot 1980, 39 years ago. And I was just talking about the irony of a man preaching peace to the world and being shot down in the street.
By an avid fan, by all accounts. It's crazy.
Yeah. The guy just wanted to be well known.
He is now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Everybody hates him.
I know, you know where you were on that day. It's a biggie.
I do, actually, and I'm glad you said that. I was going to mention that. It is one of those times that I do remember, just kind of like, almost like the 9/11 attack on the Trade Center. I was actually working in a grocery store, A&P in Charlotte, putting up stock, and my boss, Mr. Bill Jones, said, "Hey, Stan, did you hear what happened?" Blah blah blah. And I was like, "Oh, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe
it." Yeah, it was unbelievable.
I guess I was 19 years old.
Huh.
You remember where you were?
Oh yeah, I was on sabbatical in college. So it was pretty ground-shaking event.
Yes, sir.
I think local police were a little scared. All the little proto-hippie wannabes were kind of wondering what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
But it was strange.
Yeah. There was I'm going to move on from that. We did have another notable event on this day in history in 1941 was when Roosevelt made his speech of this being a day that will live in infamy after the Pearl Harbor attack, and that leads into what we're talking about today. You and I don't remember Pearl Harbor because we weren't quite here just yet.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I don't think I would have wanted to be, because then I'd be really old right now. I'm already old enough.
Losing John was bad news, but that was real bad news.
Yeah, that was. I can't even imagine. I really can't. So Pearl Harbor, we didn't celebrate, but we remembered Pearl Harbor yesterday, December 7th, and most people, and I would say most Americans that are, of at least semi-educated, know the general story of Pearl Harbor. So I really wasn't going to get into all of that. I mean, even if you saw the Pearl Harbor movie, I know that was a love story. As much as it was a movie, it wasn't very historically accurate, but it did have, kind of the general tale of what happened. Japan was basically picking a fight with the United States, and they got one.
As far as we know.
So, the diplomatic background on Pearl Harbor, why it happened. Japan, they were. Are you pretty familiar with this stuff, Mr. Scott?
Not at all, casually.
Well, and me too. I'm
fascinated by it, but I've never. There's a lot I don't know. I'm sure.
Yeah, certainly not an expert here either. But Japan was getting up all up into China's. Kool-Aid, and that's the hip version, and
yeah.
I'll cut to the chase. We had basically were trying to negotiate with them to pull out of China and Indochina. They had invaded Manchuria in 1931, but we had Japan got most of their oil and fuel from the United States or through us. And so we tried to negotiate with them, and they actually said that they'd pull out, or at least they wanted a compromise, but we wanted them to pull completely back. And we had cut off their fuel, aviation, gasoline, airplanes, parts, machine tools, all that fun stuff, and then eventually
no
your
idea.
Oil. Huh?
Cool, I had no idea about that.
Yeah, so they were like, they were, their resources were getting pinched off, and that's why they attacked us. That's the short version. let's see here. Yeah, we had ceased oil exports to Japan in July of 1941. So that was just a few months before December 7th. And that was following the seizure of French Indochina after the fall of France. Because of this decision, Japan proceeded with plans to take the oil-rich Dutch East Indies. And then on August 17th, Roosevelt warned Japan that America was prepared to take opposing steps if neighboring countries were attacked. The Japanese were faced with a dichotomy, either withdraw from China and lose face or seize new sources of raw materials in the resource-rich European colonies of Southeast Asia. So I'm not going to go into all the details. There's some dates and names, and this is not a high school history class, but just the general. That's pretty much it right there. Side note: once Japan made their attack and we declared war, Germany was actually happy that we were pulled into it because they wanted a reason to. To dominate the world. So, any experts out there, or if you're not an expert, if you just want to comment, or if you have a question that we can answer correctly or incorrectly, we may have an answer of both. 914-219-0884. The objective of the Japanese basically was they wanted to destroy important American fleet units. They wanted to prevent the Pacific Fleet from interfering with Japanese conquest of the Dutch East Indies and Malaya to enable Japan to conquer Southeast Asia without interference. Secondly, they wanted to buy time for Japan to consolidate its position and increase its naval strength before shipbuilding authorized by the 1940 Vinson-Walsh Act erased any chance of victory. Third, to deliver a blow to America's ability to mobilize its forces in the Pacific. Battleships were chosen as the main targets since they were the prestige ships of any navy at the time. And finally, it was hoped that the attack would undermine American morale such that the U.S. government would drop its demands contrary to Japanese interest and would seek a compromise peace with Japan. Striking the Pacific Fleet at anchor in Pearl Harbor carried two distinct disadvantages. The targeted ships would be in very shallow water, so it would be relatively easy to salvage and possibly repair them, and most of the crews would survive the attack. I mean, as many as we lost, most actually survived because they weren't there. They were on shore leave, and then a lot would be rescued from the harbor, the ones that didn't burn in the oil or trapped in the ships. A further important disadvantage, this of timing, and was actually known to the Japanese, was the absence from Pearl Harbor of all three of the U.S. Pacific Fleet's aircraft carriers, which would be the Big E, Enterprise, the Lexington, and the Saratoga. But despite these concerns, Yamamoto decided to press ahead. And I was going to talk about mistakes anytime you want to interject, Mr. Scott, feel free.
One thing I was wondering is, excuse me, I know the code was broken at some point early on. I wonder if it's popularly known, how soon it was broken. And that's probably a deep discussion, but I wonder if they already had your code by then.
Yeah, I was watching documentary just a couple of days ago, and they were talking about that, and honestly, I do not remember the exact timing. But there was
I can't remember. I don't think it's been popularly circulated, but I don't know. I've not dug
into
it.
Well, this was a major, one of the major mistakes was when they had actually decoded and or received the message in D.C. or you know, through the Pentagon. I don't know where the actual messages were being received and deciphered, but they had sent the information to Pearl Harbor, and it was not marked urgent. And so it was, by the time the people that needed to know about it knew about it, it was either already happening or it had already happened. And it was just, that was one of our big mistakes.
Well, I hadn't heard two things about that. One, that they had heard a kind of cryptic message from the Japanese. Climb Mount Suribachi, for instance, and I probably got the name wrong. Climb Mount somebody. And I don't know how they, if it weren't encoded, I don't know how they knew that, but maybe they realized that's what it was later on. They knew there was some activity, but then I think they say they just saw a huge formation on the radar.
Right.
So apparently they heard the timing of the attack, the launch, but didn't understand it, or like you say, it fell through channels or something.
Yeah. And then the ones they saw on the radar, they thought they were friendlies. They thought they were actually bombers returning from a and so that was on my list of mistakes. That was the first the people that were making the decisions, they didn't take it seriously. They said they really just like, you know, it'll never happen. You know, they're not going to come here. And the Japanese, they were already coming. Probably before the negotiations ended, when they said they were going to, they would pull back out of Indochina. That was a big mistake on our part. I guess it was kind of they said it was probably the biggest intelligence, FUBAR that we ever were involved in, and we paid a big price for it. Another big mistake, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing, and a lot of this I'm really just kind of remembering. I had written down some notes this afternoon, but I had watched that documentary a couple of days ago, and they were talking about they constantly in Hawaii and Oahu, they were in fear of espionage because there were actually Japanese there, and they didn't know it yet, but they suspected it, and that they were there gathering information. There was one Japanese individual that actually rented a plane and flew over Pearl Harbor and took pictures, and so they were gathering information, spying. But because of that fear of espionage, they hadn't got them yet, but the powers that be on our side had actually pulled the planes out, and I forget which airfield this was, and it may be more than one, out of the hangars and put them in a row on the airfield. And so when the Japanese did attack, they were just like sitting ducks. They just kind of straight line of, shooting at planes and destroying them. That was terrible.
Well, I hear war in general is pretty terrible, as they say.
Let's look at some numbers here. I think I got some numbers here. If I can find it. I do have some numbers. U.S., let's see, in this particular campaign, as it were, we had 8 battleships, 8 cruisers, 30 destroyers, 4 submarines, 3 USCG cutters, 47 other ships, 390 aircraft. The Japanese had 6 aircraft carriers, 2 battleships, 2 heavy cruisers, 1 light cruiser, 9 destroyers, 8 tankers, 23 fleet submarines, 5 midget submarines, and 414 aircraft. Casualties and losses. The United States lost 4 battleships. Well, they were sunk, 4 battleships, 4 battleships damaged, 1 ex-battleship sunk. I don't know what that means. 1 harbor tug sunk, 3 cruisers damaged, 3 destroyers damaged, 3 other ships damaged, 188 aircraft destroyed, 159 aircraft damaged, 2,335 killed, 1,143 wounded. Japan, they had 4 midget submarines sunk, 1 midget submarine grounded, 29 aircraft destroyed, 74 aircraft damaged, 64 killed, and 1 sailor captured. So that leads to one of the, well, they actually knew, Japan, that is, that our carriers were not there, but thank God they weren't. But they...
I think you said it all, excuse me, a minute ago. They still depending on the battleships. And,
so one thing they didn't do is they didn't destroy our fuel storage. The tank yards were, or oil tank farms were there. They could have easily destroyed them. Our dry docks were right across the harbor. And in that shallow harbor, some of the damaged ships could be recovered and repairs started sooner than if they had to be towed back to the mainland. They would have had to tow them back all the way to California. So they were able to get them, back. They actually only lost permanently 2 ships, 2 battleships. The rest were, the other 2 were repaired and put back in service. So the shallow waters helped, because they even the Arizona to this day, it's on the bottom, but you can see it, from the memorial. And I just wonder about when they were trying to get the sailors out of the ship when it was upside down, basically trying to get them out, and they perished inside of it. If they hadn't have been in such shallow water, if it had actually gone down, if it would have been easier to get, if people could have gotten out easier, I don't know. I mean, just food for thought. So this is what's known as dead air, and I apologize for that.
Me too.
I'm just trying to give accurate information without rambling,
Well, I need the evening itinerary, and I didn't have a whole lot to offer in the first place.
Well, I apologize for that late notice.
No.
I had some other things in my mind for this week. Probably more philosophical, kind of off the cuff, just thoughts I've had this week that I want to talk about, and I will talk about in another show. But after Pearl Harbor yesterday, kind of snuck up on me, and I wasn't even thinking about it, and I hadn't done a Pearl Harbor show, even though I've talked about it, with World War II show with our war series. But I was like, we need to talk about Pearl Harbor. And so here we are. talking about it like a couple of non-experts.
I'll back that up.
We've got a couple more minutes. 914-219-0884. I invite you to call, and if you've got something to add or a question or a comment, if you want to make fun of us for not knowing what we're talking about, you can, you know, we can't see you pointing and laughing at us, but we can, you can just describe it. I had started reading, and I think I've mentioned this before, the Big E, which is basically about the USS Enterprise. Well, not basically about it, it is about it. And about the USS Enterprise coming into Pearl Harbor, you know, after the fact. It was the first carrier to come in after the attack. And just the description from some of the people that were on that ship and what they saw and, you know, what they were feeling. Highly recommended. I've only gotten just a little ways into it, but for those of you that are interested in that kind of history, I certainly recommend. It's a good read so far. It's called The Big E. I'm not getting any kind of kickback from the author, so I'm just. But Mr. Author, if you're out there, I'm more than happy to take donations.
There you go. Well, I did read one book recently, and I cannot remember the name of it. It was about the submarine service in the Southwest Pacific. And I do remember that they were already there, you know, stealthily hanging out. And they went into operations immediately after that.
Can't
remember the name of the book. I'll find it. I'll text you that at some point. It's a good read, I thought. But I was astounded at how the torpedoes, in particular, that they were firing at the Japanese vessels, didn't work for quite a long period of time. Just,
oh, they
know,
were terrible. There.
Yeah, and things they didn't go off as they should or ran differently or something. And they did some. They did some testing at Pearl Harbor, which was secure again by then. And one engineer figured they needed to drop one from a, for instance, 150-foot tall tower, and it should explode, and it just fell over.
Yeah.
They realized the detonations were gone, and one submariner was looking through the scope as one hit, and said he knew it was a confirmed hit because they heard it hit, but it said it hit the side of the ship and leapt up out of the sea like a playful trout. It never went off. It just banged off the side of it.
Yeah.
It was just one thing after another that for quite a while.
Yeah, the difference in our technology at the beginning of the war and at the end of the war was phenomenal. I mean, obviously so. I mean, by the end of the war, we were in the atomic age. It was not good. The point I was wanting to make earlier, and I had this in my notes, was the reason the Japanese weren't so concerned about the fuel supply and the dry docks and all that was they basically were going to assume that they were so confident in their attack that they just thought we were going to be so discouraged and just kind of give up. And so that the war would be over before the influence of those facilities would be felt. So, you know, surprise, we didn't give up.
Do we know that they, well, we'll never know maybe, but were they specifically not targeted or they just forgot?
Well, just from what I was reading here, I believe, it may have been a little bit of both. Maybe they were just,
right.
Their objective was to get those battleships.
And again, we'll never know.
Right. Just this one paragraph, their confidence in their ability to achieve a short, victorious war also meant other targets in the harbor, especially the Navy Yard, oil tank farms, and submarine base were ignored. Since by their thinking, the war would be over before the influence of these facilities would be felt.
Okay, cool. So they by that source. They claim they clearly ignored them.
Yeah. And I guess they knew they had to make a choice. I guess the longer they stayed, the more risk. And of course, they could only carry so much, so many torpedoes and so much ammunition. So that was their mission, and that's what they did. We are at the end of the time, at the end of our time here, and I am just a smooth operator today.
You are, man. It's something to watch.
thanks for your kindness.
I enjoy every episode. This is a good thing.
Me too. You know, even when I don't know what I'm doing, I always look forward to this, and I hope that our audience isn't suffering too badly. But I appreciate each of you for either enjoying it or suffering through it and supporting us. And I, again, always happy for people to call in and give us your 2 cents worth, participate. We'd love it. Mr. Scott, thank you for being with me again today. And
sounds good. We enjoy it as always.
And we will. I guess we'll see you on the next one.
Sounds good. Have a good night.
All right. Take care.